So, folks, oil is spiking again. If you notice, the price of gasoline over the holidays, in most places well over $3 a gallon. That reflects the more than $90 a barrel trade-up that has been inching forward from the fairly steady mid-70s to just above $91 a barrel this morning. The last oil spike preceded a gigantic global economic meltdown, which killed energy demand everywhere. But this time, the world is split. Emerging markets like China, Brazil, and India are surging ahead, while the U.S. and Europe seem to be stuck. What changes have Western economies made to shift away from oil from the last spike that might insulate the economies if oil spikes above $100 this year, as some analysts estimate? Gary Golden joins us. He's a futurist who specializes in energy right here in the studio. Good morning and Happy New Year, Gary.
Good morning.
And Lisa Marganelli, our old pal at the New America Foundation and author of the book Oil on the Brain, Petroleum's Long Strange Trip to Your Tank, joins us. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
You're on the East Coast this weekend. Good for you. All right, and Happy New Year, Lisa. Let's begin with you. What explains this spike above $90 a barrel? Is this demand-driven, or are we seeing people hedging other bets by investing in commodities, as has been the case in some of the metals as well?
Well, I think it's the whole stew. I mean, basically, the world's economy is recovering, and so you have a lot of growth in GDP. And the places that the economy is growing, like India and China, are places that are very oil-intensive as their GDP grows. So that's a big driver. Of course, the dollar is low, which means that the price of oil is high, and you expect to see investors rushing back and forth between these two things because they kind of hedge each other. When the dollar's low, oil's high, and when oil is lower, the dollar is higher. So that's how they insulate themselves.
Understood. Oil producers, though, got a huge windfall when oil spiked last time above $100 a barrel. I'm wondering if those investments and that windfall was used to bring production online that's going to insulate us maybe from the severity if we spike above $100 again.
I think that's a wonderful dream, but I don't know. I don't believe that that's happening. The lesson to the big oil producers, the big national oil producers, particularly OPEC members of the last spike, was that if you don't invest in extra capacity, the price of oil will go up. And so in some, not in all of OPEC producers, but in some OPEC producers, you definitely saw an understanding that the less they invested and the more that they kind of constrained supply, the better it was for them. And you've definitely heard countries, Venezuela has said that they'd be happy to see it go to $100 a barrel. Others have as well.
That's Lisa Marganelli, a fellow at the New America Foundation. Gary Golden, a futurist who does a lot of energy analysis. So what alternatives have benefited from the investment, to try to anticipate this spike? And really, a lot of the money that came from the $140 a barrel spike made some alternative energy sources look really attractive.
Sure. So because oil is a transportation fuel, really the only alternative investment has been in biofuels. But I think the big story that we want to look at in 2011 is in domestic natural gas production. I think that's the emerging story for the United States.
And the U.S. is a huge producer of natural gas, along with Qatar, the Soviet Union, or Russia, excuse me, is a big natural gas producer. And how is natural gas an alternative to gasoline and oil?
It's not. So one of the catches with gasoline is that as long as you have a combustion engine, the only thing that's going to substitute that is another liquid fuel. So natural gas can be used as a fuel for electric vehicles that are powered by fuel cells, but there is no substitute to oil outside of a biofuel, liquid fuel substitute.
You can't convert to natural gas? I mean, forklift trucks use natural gas. There are some buses in the city of New York use natural gas.
Yeah. There is certainly a price point in which converting a natural gas into a liquid does make sense, but then you look at different distribution and infrastructure challenges. So I think that we're kind of – we've made our bed in terms of oil dependency at this point.
So transportation is the one big oil cost in the U.S. economy. Electrical energy is the other.
Yes.
Is there any focus on, grid technology and distribution technology that will increase the efficiency of our current grid, given the scare that happened when oil went to $140 a barrel 2 years ago?
Sure. So in 2010, we saw a big push in the media for the smart grid. It's this notion of combining software and sensors with the utility network to make a more resilient, dynamic system. I think that
employs a lot of dweeby journalists who talk about it a lot, including yourself.
Yes.
Anything actually coming online?
No, and that's part of the issue. So we were at the kind of the top of the hype cycle in 2010, and I think that 2011 could actually be a down period for the smart grid. We've rolled out some smart meters. There's been government stimulus funding, but the utilities are struggling to find the business model. So I think the thing to watch in 2011 is this notion of a microgrid or distributed power. So actually using fuel cells and natural gas to bring power generation closer to the end
individual
user.
Individual points. So neighborhood-level fuel cells, actually house-level fuel cells, that sort of thing. Lisa Marganelli, you've seen these notions of alternatives come and go. How come there isn't a responsible business model for other forms of energy, even when we're talking about $90 a barrel of oil?
Well, I think that... First of all, these models are evolving. We have 130 different electric vehicles, I think, around the world coming online this coming year. The Nissan Leaf is building a huge plant, I think, in Tennessee to build a lot of Leafs, which is an electric vehicle. So we actually have these models emerging, but you know, oil is just so cheap, and even when oil spikes, everybody, you know, the moment the spike comes back down, everyone goes This is going to be fine. We're going to work it out. But I think one of the things that's happening on a big global level that is a big change in our lifetime is that for all of our lives, if you looked at a world map of oil pipelines, you would have seen that they looked like arteries going towards two hearts, one in the U.S. and one in Europe. And on January 1st, the very first pipeline from Siberia into China opened. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the beginning of, you know, China has had a lot of tankers visiting it, obviously, and it has been, its oil use is growing tremendously. But this is the beginning of the whole realignment of everything. And at the same time, because China is becoming more dependent upon oil, they have a huge push to push more towards electric vehicles and these other mm-hmm. business models and really be... destroy some of the vested interests that are in place.
Or at the very least, to create the three-hearted global energy-consuming monster. I love that image.
Exactly.
Lisa Marganelli, a fellow at the New America Foundation and author of the book Oil in the Brain, Petroleum's Long, Strange Trip to Your Tank. Before we go, Gary Goldman, she raises an issue which reminds me of the old RCA. When radio was created, they had to invent the radio box, kind of like the Nissan Leaf, to sell, to get people to use this capacity. Is it possible that electric vehicles will use this electrical capacity and actually stimulate the demand that hasn't happened before?
Well, I think what we need to look for with electric vehicles is new markets. So EVs and urban transportation environments, so not vehicles that we own, but electric vehicles that we access. So, you know, fleets, that's where we need to look at EVs, not just substituting the SUV at home, but new market demand.
And let's hope that more than just Gary Golden and us here in the Takeaway Studio do the looking and the buying of those. Gary Golden, futurist who specializes in energy, thanks so much.
Well, I hope everyone had a good New Year's and a good holiday. I was away having a great holiday. On New Year's, a few of our listeners, when the clock struck midnight, let us know what they were up to. Benny in Brooklyn texted us, "I ate a giant peanut butter chocolate cookie with raspberry jam with the woman I'll marry and some of my best friends in the world." That sounds like a pretty good New Year's. And a listener
Penny, go,
Oklahoma
dude.
Says, "Spoke to my son in Houston and watched my 17-pound cat sleep, then picked up my drunk girlfriend at a party." So he's the designated driver watching.
His resolution
sleep.
This year is to get a life, actually. That person,
yeah. We want to give a welcome back to our web producer, Caitlin Schamberg. I'm Celeste Headley.
I'm John Hockenberry. Caitlin looks terrific, by
she
the way.
Does.
This is The Takeaway.